Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you back as we continue Superhero Month here at the Absolution Network. Yes, it has been absolutely fun. You know, the past 2 weeks we've gone through two-thirds of the Trinity with Superman and Batman, and this week we finish off the final third of that Trinity as we review the 2009 animated movie from DC that went direct to DVD, Wonder Woman. You know, Wonder Woman is one of probably the most underappreciative parts of the DC Trinity, and so it's going to be very fun to talk about her character, talk about this movie that was very good. You know, it was very interesting watching this movie, you know, when I first saw it, especially considering that really my only knowledge, or at least most of my knowledge of Wonder Woman, came from the Justice League animated series from the early thousands on Cartoon Network. So, and really, they are two different Wonder Womans, and we'll talk more about that later. So, let's get right into it, as we have no email, no comments, no iTunes reviews. Let's get right into cast and synopsis. Starring Carrie Russell as Princess Diana of Themyscira / Diana Prince / Wonder Woman. Nathan Fillion, a.k.a. Captain Hammer, as Steve Trevor, Alfred Molina as Ares, Virginia Madsen as Hippolyta, Rosario Dawson plays Artemis, Tara Strong plays Alexa, Vicky Lewis plays Persephone, Oliver Platt plays Hades, and John DiMaggio plays Demos and a homeless man who's drunk. John DiMaggio playing a man who's drunk? Or a character, for that matter, that's drunk? Where have I heard that before? You know, if I just bend my mind around it, it might finally come up. But, yeah, let's not dwell on that. The synopsis. Centuries ago, the Amazons, a proud and fierce race of warrior women, led by Queen Hippolyta, battled Ares, the god of war, and his army. During the battle, Hippolyta beheaded her son, Thrax, whom Ares forcefully conceived with her, and then defeated the god of war himself. Zeus, however, prevented her from killing Ares. Instead, Hera bounded his powers with magic bracers, so he was deprived of his ability to draw the powers from the aura of violence and death he could instigate, and only another god could release him. In compensation, the Amazons were granted the island of Themyscira, where they could be eternally useful and isolated from man in the course of their duties of holding Ares prisoner for all of eternity. Later, Hippolyta was granted a daughter, Princess Diana, whom she shaped on the sands of the seashore and gave life with her own blood. Over the millennia, an American fighter pilot, Steve Trevor, is shot down and crashed on the island, where he soon runs afoul of the Amazon population, including the warlike and aggressive Artemis. Steve and Diana meet and fight, and she defeats him, taking him to the Amazons. Hippolyta decides he should be returned home, and Diana volunteers, but instead is assigned to guard Ares' cell instead, since her mother argues that she has not enough experience in dealing with the dangers of the outside world. with the help of Alexa, Diana defies her mother and faces, and her face is hidden by a helmet, and her guard duty is covered by the bookish but kind-hearted Alexa, as she goes to win the right to take Trevor back home. She proceeds to win the tournament and reveals herself to her mother, who grants her passage. While this is happening, Persephone, who's guarding Ares alongside Alexa, betrays her and stabs her through the heart with her sword because she has fallen in love with Ares and releases him as they go off to try to find a way to release his braces. With the additional task of trying to capture Ares, Diana takes Steve Trevor back to New York in her new invisible jet. While there, he volunteers to help. As they investigate, they uncover a pattern of violence created by Ares and his presence that lead towards him over time. After, though, being attacked by one of Ares' minions, Deimos, they are led to the fact that he is going to the gates of Tartarus so he can meet with his uncle Hades. While they do attempt to try to stop him, they fail, and Ares is able to get his magical bracers off. What proceeds is a fantastic fight in Washington, D.C., with Wonder Woman and the Amazons against Ares and his minions. And though it seems like Ares has the upper hand, Wonder Woman is able to defeat and behead him, which leads to Ares becoming, alongside his son, another minion of Hades. Trevor and Diana split, but seeing that her daughter is lonely, back on the island, Hippolyta grants her the ability to go and be Wonder Woman to the outside world as Themyscira's diplomat. Diana heads back to the world to live with Steve Trevor as she becomes Wonder Woman. So that's it for synopsis. And with all that being said, let's get right into our review of Wonder Woman. Let's get right into the interview as we usually do. We start with music, though aforementioned there will actually be a... it will be alongside animation, so we do have a new category that we'll be reviewing, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But let's start off with music, and let's talk about the Wonder Woman theme. You know, there's not many Wonder Woman themes to work off of. Really, the primary one is sort of the 1970 Wonder Woman television series theme, which is, you know, Wonder Woman, which this movie was not imitating whatsoever. So, you know, really there hasn't been a Wonder Woman theme, and so this is really, to an extent, really the first big sort of serious Wonder Woman theme. And I thought it was very well. It has, I think, all the epicness and grandeur I think such a theme should have. And yet, at the same time, it's subtle. You know, definitely sort of Greek mythology based type of themes, you know, the sort of instruments that you'd want to hear in sort of a grand score of sort of a Greek epic. But again, it has that subtlety, and it's very unique because it's sort of that thing to where it's sort of like the subtlety of feminism. It's that classic Greek epic theme, but sort of a feminine version of it, which I think makes it very unique to Wonder Woman. It definitely fits what it's going for, and I don't say sort of it's the feminine version of a Greek theme to be disrespectful, which is the sad part that I even have to say that, but that's here nor there. It's that subtlety there that sort of I'm hinting at that really makes this theme work, I think, for Wonder Woman. You know, especially since it has no words. It's just this very great theme. It's epic. It has a lot of grandeur to it. The instruments are beautiful. Great use of strings. Great use of brass. You know, it works well as a superhero theme and as sort of a Greek epic theme. So I think, and mind you, you were hearing it before we started the review, so you can hear it for yourself. A la very bad quality, probably, of it, but that still. But, you know, I do like the theme, and I think it is a great score overall. And speaking of the score, I think the overall score works. I think a common theme with this movie is going to be subtlety. You know, there's a lot of subtlety. Sometimes it works, sometimes we don't. We'll get to it as we need to when we talk about this movie. But here, score is very subtle. It's not drowned out by sort of music, as sometimes you'll hear with Greek epics. But when it does need music, it uses it very, very well. It never feels like mood music. It has a sort of Greek epic feel to the musical style. It's very, like I said, it's very subtle in a lot of places, and it works very, very well. You know, especially during the fight scenes, I think the music is done extremely well. I mean, they have different themes for the different fights, and they fit the fights perfectly, and they're done, like I said, done very well. They really draw you into the movie, and so I think this is probably one of the better scores of the DC direct-to-DVD animated films that have come out in the past couple years. I really enjoy this score, and overall, I think it's very, very well done. So, with that, we're going to take a quick break, as we're going to have a word from our sponsor. When we come back, we're going to cover animation and acting.
Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it with animation. First, let's talk about the overall style of the movie. Again, two things come to mind, and like I said, both of these are going to go throughout the movie. Subtlety and sort of Greek themes here, because again, a lot of it is based off Greek mythology, you know, as you would imagine Wonder Woman would be. So again, sort of those Greek themes are in there, especially Greek epic themes. You also have a subtlety there, and again, like I said, I think it's really comparable to sort of that subtlety that really is the difference between sort of feminine and masculine, you know, that, or at least the very much that leans it towards that feminine side. Very smooth lines, very, not that they're not crisp, but, you know, it's not like hard lines, hard edges, very smooth, rounded shapes. Very well done. It's a unique style. I think this is really one of the first big DC animated films of this, like, new generation of animated films that really had a completely unique style. At least this is the first one I saw that was completely unique and really just a complete departure from the classic Bruce Timm style, which in this case I think is a good thing. I think if it was completely the Bruce Timm style, you know, it wouldn't work. You know, this, again, very soft shapes, very, I can see influences of sort of Japanese manga in there a little bit, but it's a complete unique style. Again, like I said, I love sort of the softness of the character designs and of the art in general. A lot of great detail in the background and everything. So overall, the style, I very much enjoy. Or should I say, I very much enjoy, because very much joy is not something you hear. Very much joy. Thank you. Very much joy. I love it when I can speak. But with that being said, let's move on to character designs. Let's start off with Princess Diana and Wonder Woman. Given a very, very youthful appearance, you know, very much more of a teenager. Or at least she's like at that sort of strange place between sort of like very old, very young adult. Actually, young adult is probably the best way to describe it. She's not a teenager, but she's not like a full adult. She's like in that 20-year range. And it's just, you know, she doesn't have a lot of, it shows that she doesn't have a lot of years experience. You know, that was something that you kind of saw with Wonder Woman in the Justice League animated series. It seemed like she had a lot of years of experience, at least in fighting and that stuff. She at least seemed older than she was. Maybe it had more to do with, you know, with Bruce Timm's. You know, she was a little bit more square, therefore seemed a little bit more seemed more muscular. You know, here Wonder Woman and Princess Diana, for that matter, is more toned. More slender, more sort of built for speed and stamina. She still has the power that Wonder Woman has, but she's not as sort of muscular as, you know, Wonder Woman's in the past have been created, which I think makes this character design very, very unique. I'm very, very happy that they went with the classic design. Then again, though, this was way before the whole new suit and new costumes, the costume that came before the reboot of DC's New 52 and the one that's in there now. It is very much the classic design. little sort of modernization here or there, but really it's pretty much the same, which I really appreciate it. It is one of the things of contention in worrying about making a Wonder Woman movie of any kind, is the fact that, you know, her costume gets made fun of a lot. And so I think it takes a lot of courage by DC to, or at least Bruce Timm and his crew, to really, you know, stick with that original design. And it's done very, very well. It hits all the marks of what Wonder Woman should be. When you see her in her Wonder Woman outfit, you think, damn, that's Wonder Woman. Steve Trevor, I think this is probably the best improvement of this movie over an original character, you know. My knowledge of the Steve Trevor was sort of the classic World War II idea of the Steve Trevor, the very debonair sort of secret agent man. You know, that type of character, whereas this Steve Trevor, well, I think Bill Murray says it best.
Chicks dig me, because I rarely wear underwear, and when I do, it's usually something unusual.
Thank you, Bill! Like, Bill's in studio here, sitting next to me, which would be very, very odd. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, this is a completely different, unique Steve Trevor, much more rugged, much more sort of, definitely fits sort of that fighter pilot feel. You know, actually, because it's sort of the air battle and everything, he very much reminds me of sort of a blonde Maverick, you know, as in Maverick from Top Gun, played by Tom Cruise. You know, that's the type of character that this character design reminds me of. Also, a lot of that comes from also the voice, but we'll talk about the voice later. But yeah, the sort of rugged but very different type of design for Steve Trevor. Very modernized. And I very much, I really do enjoy it. I think this is a better design of Steve Trevor than the original design of the Steve Trevor. So, again, I think wonderful job on his design. It tells you everything you need to know about him. Very soldier. Again, it's that sort of, you can see the years of battle on his face. You can see his sort of veteran status on his arm. Next, we have Ares, the god of war. And it's always interesting to see different takes on sort of Greek gods. And here, again, I love the color scheme with Ares. I love the use of red and sort of the colors of war that match with his character design. Sort of, I like the white hair. Just this overall sort of very samurai-like type of look, especially when he's in that final armor. It's very samurai-like. You know, you see sort of the blends of sort of Japanese anime style from here to there in this movie. You know, I definitely think the Japanese anime style is definitely an influence art style wise on some characters. I think you see that with Wonder Woman. I think you see that with Ares. I think you see it with a majority of the Amazons. So I like his character designs. I love sort of the imposing figure that they give him. And again, I love his color scheme. Hippolyta, if I could whistle, I would, but let's just say, if you've seen this movie, you know that whistle when, Steve Trevor first sees Diana in her Wonder Woman costume? Yeah, that's what I'm doing when I see, Hippolyta. All I'm gonna say is I think we know that, Princess Diana gets it from her mama. But, all joking aside, yeah, again, it's really interesting to see that this is Princess Diana. You know, you see definitely that Princess Diana is Hippolyta's daughter. You know, and really, to an extent, she looks like Diana if she had had hundreds of years of experience in battle. You know, and that is something Hippolyta definitely, you can see on her face. You see the sort of, again, that veteran status in her character design. You know, the slight sort of wrinkle here or there gives it that aspect. You know, overall, she looks like a leader. She looks like a commander, you know, when she's on the battlefield. I love, especially the first time we see it, I love her sort of armor. It is absolutely spectacular. I love that shield and with the symbol on it, everything. It's in the helmet. Oh, it's just wonderful. Next, we have Artemis. Artemis is always an interesting design because there's always a different take on Artemis. Very much enjoy this design. I do like that they sort of went with a more tan look in a way to sort of differentiate Artemis from really the rest of the Amazon. And not that there aren't, you know, there are sort of African, or at least dark-skinned, I should say, Amazons that are light-skinned. You know, they're different skin tones. But sort of the olive type of complexion that Artemis has, it just makes her character stand out. That and her red hair with the ponytail just adds to it. Alexa and Persephone, again, both unique character designs that I think were done very, very well. Again, you can definitely read who the characters are in their character designs. You see sort of the bookish, sort of smart aspect of Alexa. And you see sort of, really you have two designs of Persephone in this movie. You have that very first time you see her, where she doesn't have the scar and she doesn't have the hair over her eye. You know, very warrior-like, very much like Artemis. But then you see the later half, you see really in her character how the years of being away from her man have actually affected her. You know, and you can see why, just in her character design, why she, you know, fell in love with Ares and why she betrayed the Amazons. With that, we're going to move on to Hades, and really, again, just a different design, very unique, and especially when you think about it, again, God of War is starting to come out, you know, of course, probably the best known version of Hades is the Disney version. They really wanted to do something different, and it really is unique. You know, if you look at this character design, you wouldn't think, oh, God of the Underworld. But it's just such an interesting design of making this very obese, you know, God that's, you know, his whole aspect is having more servants by, you know, having people who are dead. So, very interesting. I think a very classical idea of sort of the Greek god that I find very, very interesting that they went with. Special effects, I thought, were done very, very well. There's a lot of great, you know, when it comes to explosions and sort of lighting effects and lightning and things like that, done very, very well. And I say that because I really didn't notice the special effects. And I think that's sort of, sometimes it is a sign of how good the special effects can be. When you really don't notice them at all, you know, they're doing their job. Because the special effects, as spectacular as they can be sometimes, they really shouldn't be the star of the show. They're supposed to enhance what you're seeing on screen. And definitely with the special effects, you saw that here. And then, of course, backgrounds. Yeah, I'm really mixed on the backgrounds because they're very good. Again, I think this is one of the better artwork styles of the DC animated films. But some of the backgrounds I just felt left me wanting more. I thought the DC background was done very well, but you know, the cityscape left me wanting more overall. So that's it for animation. Let's move on to acting, which is our new category that we're starting with this episode to talk about. Because you did have the voice, you know, it's something I've been wanting to do is that we have the voice actors who do wonderful, wonderful jobs. And a lot of times I don't talk about them much. And I do kind of want to hear because they do a very, very good job. If there's one overall problem I have with the voice acting, it's subtlety, but we'll get to that with individual characters. First, let's talk about the protagonists. Carrie Russell does a wonderful job as Diana. You know, she really makes me believe in this very different take on Diana. You know, the Diana in the Justice League animated series was this very inquisitive mind of sort of Wonder Woman. It was a take of, like, you know, she, unlike the rest of her, you know, Amazon sisters, you know, she's interested by the world of man, and she wants to know more about it. She's willing to learn. She's not willing to sit there and sort of put her views over the world of man. Here, it's a very much more of a warrior-like Wonder Woman. You know, first time she gets there, one of the first things she does is she tells that little girl, you know, how to basically dismember little boys, which is always well. But again, Kerry Russell does a wonderful job doing this, portraying in the voice. Acting was superb. Nathan Fillion, I think, stole the show. Even though, ultimately, he didn't get the best line in the movie, which I'll talk about in a second when we go to Artemis. But, you know, for the most part, he just stole the show as Steve Trevor. You know, just absolutely wonderful job from Nathan Fillion acting as Steve Trevor. You know, just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful lines, you know, from that time where it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I lost that. I was about to say something that's probably best saved for later. But, you know, it's just like when he first sees the group of Amazons, you know, bathing, he goes, wow, I'm in paradise. Or am I dreaming? Or something along those lines. And then the arrow comes and it's like, and it's over. And just his, you know, you smell pretty. Must you flirt? It's only natural, princess. Or natural angel, excuse me. just the way he called Diana Angel. You know, it very, very funny. So Nathan Fillion did a wonderful, wonderful job as Steve Trevor. Virgin Madison did a, again, wonderful job as Hippolyta. You know, I talked earlier about how her character design sort of showed that veteran, that sort of commander leader status. Her voice was very commanding, and I think that also helped in that understanding of her really being the commander. So done very, very well. And then, of course, Rosario Dawson is the last sort of protagonist I'll sort of talk about here. As Artemis, again, she is probably, I think, the second best actor next to Nathan Fillion. She also had, just at the beginning where you had the back and forth between Artemis and Steve Trevor, you know, so what's the deal with the princess? The deal is that I will castrate you if you come within 5 feet of her. But no, she definitely has my favorite line in the entire movie, where she goes, you know, I feel like it's the first day of school. And then Hippolyta goes, and yet you could not find a bigger sword, Artemis? It's like, sword? Queen, this is but my dagger. Which means we have to go find Cloud's Buster Sword for Artemis. Wonderful. that line just cracks me up. Sword, this is but my dagger. I'm like, hell yeah. It just cracks me up every time I hear it. If there was one sort of though criticism with protagonists, and really it goes to Kerry Russell, is that there, in some of the later scenes, I don't think she has sort of the intensity that she sometimes needs. And this goes for all the actors. There's sort of a lacking of intensity. And I see this as no better example as we go into sort of the protagonist acting with Alfred Molina, who does a wonderful job. He just absolutely incredible job voicing Ares. Very much what I would imagine Ares to sound like. But they're sort of, again, when there's sort of scenes where emotion and excitement should be coming out to an extent, like, you know, when he's calling for it, go, Zeus! Zeus! You know, it should be more like, Zeus! Zeus! And I hope I didn't blow out your ears. But, you know, it's that point of, like, the intensity there should have been, at the very least, a little bit more. You know, it's, again, it's that lean towards subtlety just a bit too much within the voice acting. Again, not saying that it leaned towards feminism in the voice acting, but it leaned too much towards subtlety in the voice acting that I think sometimes dissipated some of the intensity that should be there in certain scenes. Outside of that, Alfred Molina did a wonderful job as Ares. Vicki Lewis made you believe in this sort of villain who had betrayed her Amazon sisters. Her best scene was definitely that scene with Hippolyta, you know, the short little fight where, you know, they're talking and Hippolyta kills Persephone. It's like, you know, you were an Amazon, but I am an Amazon, but I'm also a woman. You know, there's just great character moment and character death in that line. So wonderful job by Vicki Lewis. And, you know, Oliver Platt, wonderful job just as this very, very creepy Hades. So, overall with voice acting, again, wonderful job. Like I said, the one thing probably holding it down is sort of the lack of intensity in certain scenes. So, with that being said, we're going to move on to our final part, story, after a word from our sponsors.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No!
Can I get your ship out?
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fans.
F*** Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome back, and let's get right into story. And the very first thing we're going to talk about is the film's adaptation of the comic book source material here, because really this is Wonder Woman's origin. It's the classic traditional Wonder Woman origin. And I thought they did it very, very well. Especially the beginning, the whole contest of, you know, the different Amazons competing to be who's going to be the emissary for Steve Trevor back to America. Again, those who know Wonder Woman's backstory know, you know, again, this is all part of the sort of Wonder Woman myth, to put it in a way. I think they did a very good job of being true to what the traditional Wonder Woman origin story was, and at the same time, modernizing it. You know, again, keeping the whole idea that Steve Trevor comes by plane, but instead of it him being a spy who, you know, escaping the Nazis, in this case, he's a fighter pilot in a jet plane. Which, you know, makes more sense. It's little subtleties, little changes to modernize it that I thought were done very, very well. One change that he did, again, Steve Trevor, to my knowledge in the original comic, was not, again, I'm sure people will correct me if I am, and please do. Because my knowledge comes from what I've heard people talk about the actual original story. I've yet to actually read it myself. But from what I've seen, again, Steve Trevor, you know, he was that sort of suave, sort of secret agent, really wasn't a womanizer. Here, that idea of a womanizer, I think, really lends itself especially towards what the Amazon's feelings towards man are, and it creates a great tension. So I think that's actually an improvement over the original origin in having, you know, Steve Trevor be a bit of a womanizer. all in all, they did a wonderful job adapting the source material. You know, this feels like a Wonder Woman story that a Gail Simone or a George Perez or an other comic book writer would write. You know, it works very, very well. And overall, you know, and I'll talk about this more later, but it really makes me want to see more at the end of the day. So, I think, again, this is probably one of those better adaptations of a comic book source material to a film, whether it be animated or live action. Next, let's talk about the interaction between Diana and Steve. Because, again, sort of here the whole idea that the Amazons have of, you know, what man is and how man betrayed him and how they can't trust men. Again, the interactions between Diana and Steve, you know, his bits of womanizing, you know, because again, Diana's very, very cute. Well, very, very pretty. Why wouldn't he hit on her? So, and the eventual relationship that leads over, that sort of influences their thought process, you know, among other things. You know, I think Persephone's final speech to Hippolyta definitely also had a way some of them started to feel. You know, you see different stories throughout the movie that sort of affect different Amazons and helping them think maybe cutting ourselves from it was a bad idea. You know, whether it be Persephone's sort of plea towards Hippolyta, Alexandra's, you know, influence on Artemis, and in this case, Steve Trevor's interaction with Diana. My favorite scene in the movie is that hospital scene. Because really, to an extent, and I don't know what it is for women, but I know as a guy, it was very irritating in the movie to constantly hear, "Oh, men are so horrible. Men are horrible." You know, when Caddy, you know, flirts, like, "Oh, part of some male brainwashing." You know, Steve going, "Can we try to focus on that other social evil, Ares, God of War?" But just everything, you know, "Oh, this is all," so, which, trust me, I have a lot of experience hearing, but it's, "Oh, how horrible are men?" And just that point to where he snaps and like, "Look, you know, we don't, I'm not doing this out of some freaking, you know, male domination thing. I'm doing this because I care for you. I'm sorry." It's like, when he finally snapped, I stood up and cheered. Because, yes, it created a balance. There had been sort of an uneasy balance of Diana's being very overpowering of Steve Trevor. But in that one scene, Steve Trevor was actually able to finally make himself sort of the equal to Diana as far as sort of personalities. And I think that made their relationship and their interactions, for that matter, very believable and very real. So I very, very much enjoyed that. And I think they really covered sort of the whole topic of men versus women in a very classy way. Point number three. Ares' ultimate plan. You know, I do find this a fatal flaw because they really never go in-depth to his ultimate plan. Really, what I got from it was that he was trying to create everlasting war so he'll gain power, so he could prop, because as most Greek sort of god stories are, they want to gain power so they could try to overthrow Zeus. Though they never really say that's what he's trying to do. And because of that, if he, on his plan, I would like more detail on his plan. But, yeah, ultimately just trying to instigate war, because that's what he is. He's the god of war. I can't even fault him for that, though. You know, really, there's not much of a plan, because it's just a matter of he spent all those years seducing Persephone and just needed to find a way to get the magical arm links taken off so he could gain his psychic power back and lead an army to create everlasting war. It's a very simple plan, really, when you think about it. But that leads into the next talking point, which is the fights, which I love the brutality of the fights in this movie. start to finish, every fight scene in this movie is absolutely spectacular and absolutely awesome. This is the power of, you know, DC animation. This is the power of American anime. And I know you knew I was going to say that. And, you know, this is the power of what Bruce Timm and his crew can do. And just the fights here are absolutely spectacular. You know, the first fight with Hippolyta and sort of the Amazons fighting against Ares. Great flow and ebb in each fight scene that you saw. And it really helped set up the story that was to come. You had the various little fights. And the fight between Diana and Artemis at the beginning was cute. And it really sort of introduced you even more to these characters. The fight scene between Demos and Wonder Woman, I think it's the best of the movie. It's just this knockdown, drag-out brawl, and it's just awesome. And it shows you just how good of a fighter Diana is, which I really enjoy. You know, instead of, you know, it's one way to sort of show character depth of a character without having to use exposition. And in this case, you know, using the fight to sort of show Diana's depth and her abilities as a fighter was really ingenious and unique. Especially, you know, I very much laughed at the whole point, you know, where she's able to use high heels as a weapon. There was actually originally a line to where, you know, as she made a joke about high heels, and then when she did it, because, oh, well, I guess they're good for something, but they ended up taking that out. The fight at the Tartamis gate, I thought was very well done. I think that's probably the weakest fight of the movie. And it's not because Diana loses, but, you know, it's just missing something. I think it's just a bit too subtle. And that's sort of, again, like I said, subtlety is a big thing with this movie, but there are times where I think they use being subtle too much. And it sometimes leaves out intensity that's needed in the movie. But, you know, that big final epic battle had everything that you wanted. The only thing I could probably see wrong is that it might unfortunately remind people too much of Amazon's attack, which is a... yeah, I'm mixed on it, but a lot of people, you know, feel that it was a terrible event where, you know, the Amazons attacked DC in the DC comic book universe, but we're not going to get into that. So, yeah. Ultimately, the fights were done very, very well. And in our final talking point, this is more editorial and really not important to the movie, but I do kind of find it funny, you know, there's a sort of current debate about women in pop culture that's going on. And I do kind of find it funny how, at least my feelings with this movie and sort of Diana's and Steve's relationship in this movie sort of really mirrors what's going on with the whole discussion of women in pop culture. And I found that very unique. And I think it's because the interaction between Diana and Steve really do mirror pretty much any time this discussion happens. A lot of times when these debates happen, especially this woman in pop culture, a lot of times it does get towards, oh, how horrible men are, and, you know, oh, men are trying to be domineering and everything, and it takes somebody to stand up and say, look, no, there's complete lack of common sense in that statement, because for those who don't know, there are a lot of people who feel that the way women are being treated in pop culture is towards some sort of self, if I don't know how to put it, but basically, you know, try to inflate the male ego, which I personally can't see, because, yeah, I think it's a combination of, because of sort of the sexuality that we do see in comics these days, people immediately want to jump on it for two reasons. One, they want to be good people. And so they, you know, this is going back to something Bill Maher said. You know, people want to be good people, and since they can't be in the army and do certain things, anytime they can see something that they feel, oh, this is an injustice, and, you know, I have to be against this, you know, they'll jump on it without even thinking twice. combine that with especially fans wanting to legitimize the industry and how society sort of frowns upon anything that's sort of sexual as being legitimate, it leads towards these type of discussions being one-sided. And at the very least, this movie sort of mirrors my, it mirrors my sort of interaction with the debate of women in pop culture, because, you know, I'm very much like Steve Trevor, where people take my opinions and throw them out the window because, you know, I like fan service. I like, you know, I have pinups of Black, I have a pinup poster of Black Cat behind me and that stuff. And so people automatically want to, you know, my opinion doesn't matter. You know, I'm just a freak, or I'm something along those lines. And I do feel very much like Steve Trevor in that hospital scene. And I think that's something to help me connect to that scene very much, to where, like, look, I'm not doing this because I'm some chauvinistic male. There are deeper, more layered reasons to why I like this. I've explained them. You choose not to accept those reasons. So, yeah. I did find it interesting how, at the very least, the movie was mirroring my type of connection towards the current discussion of women in pop culture, if not the entire, really mirroring the current discussion of women in pop culture. So, overall, final ratings for Wonder Woman. You know, it's a great movie. It's got spectacular fight scenes, a very well done score, wonderful art, great acting. Its only flaw is, again, that lack of, or at least the use of too much subtlety in certain scenes that takes away from the intensity that scene should have, that it can sometimes pull you out of the scene and out of the movie. But overall, it is an absolutely wonderful movie. I very much enjoy it. I think it should be a part of anybody's animated library. A 4 out of 5 for me. So that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments on this episode, on my review of the things I said, there are a multitude of ways to do it. First, you can email me at absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also, of course, leave comments on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And remember, you can also check out all of my other sites on the web, which includes Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and the Comic Book Pitch, which you can find at the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS podcast, which reviews every Godzilla movie ever made, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're here on the site, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site and check out their wonderful programs, like Michael Bailey's Youth to the Long Box and From Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Spiker's Major Spoilers Podcast, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks, and, of course, all our other friends on the sidebar of the site that do wonderful jobs. Check them out. And that's it for this episode. Next week, we've covered the entire Trinity. So why not cover a movie that has the entire Trinity in it? That being Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. Well, we're going to have that for you, as we're going to cover what is my favorite DC direct-to-DVD animated movie. A movie that is based off one of my favorite trade paperbacks one of my favorite comic book arts that was turned into a trade paperback, which is where I read it. And I'm getting off topic, which is really not helping. But anyways, it's one of my favorite comic book stories, and that's the return of Supergirl to the DC Universe in the early 2000s. That's right. Next week, we cover Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, right here on Tom's Prerogative. So, until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort, but I am not worried. For one day,
DJ Club Nova. Don't sleep on it.